The following Torah class was presented by Rabbi Mordechai Ryan during the fall season 2007. For more information, please visit www.teach613.org. We thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy.
A wonderful good evening to everyone, and a hearty welcome back. We had quite a bit of a break. It's good to be back. The style that I chose for this class, for this season, is Melodies of Life, to listen to a song together and then to follow that up with discussion on the theme of the song. I don't mean to sound biased in favor of today's Jewish melodies, songs, but I happen to be pretty biased and pretty impressed with Jewish talent. And every one of the songs really has a theme so powerful, I would equate it with anything that we get from traditional Jewish literature. I mean, these are very powerful, meaningful songs for the very issues that we grapple with in contemporary times. And because it's done with music, the message becomes almost so friendly that you can't argue with it. And you could just more easily appreciate what the author of the song was trying to convey as a message. The song that I chose for our opening night is entitled Smile for the Camera. It's a song on a very famous series called Destiny. This happens to be Destiny 4, and they got a lot of beautiful songs, and I chose this one as our opening. You will notice on the other side, I put my own style of points for discussion, but let's start with the music and enjoy it.
Family was gathered by the hotel, dressed in latest fashions and designs. They flew it all the way from Chicago, only the best for K-5. Hey Dad, I don't know why we came here. We could have my bar mitzvah back at home. Well son, you see, this here place is special. Don't you appreciate old stones? Now put this sack of shawl on your shoulders, and make sure that you smile when I call. And put this prayer book in your left hand, and put your right hand up upon the wall. Kenny Litton stood beside the hotel, and put his hand upon the wall. When suddenly he heard the call. Smile for my camera, for Mama Papa Rover. went and stood beside the Kotel, and put his hand upon the wall. When suddenly he heard the Kotel calling, Kenny, do you hear my call? Kenny, I'm part of the nation.
As I promised you, a delightful song, very contemporary message, and the question if we can pull out many of the nuances in the presentation to see what the author of this song, Eli Nathan, it's a pseudonym, is trying to get across. What concepts did the author choose to combine in order to bring across whatever message he's trying to bring across? There are two concepts here that he chose to join to bring across his message.
Kotel and Bar Mitzvah.
Say it again.
Kotel and Bar Mitzvah.
Beautiful. Kotel and Bar Mitzvah. What does the Kotel represent? Jewish people. Okay. What is his comment about Bar Mitzvah?
What is it after all? Seems to be a question. Or came back a little bit to that.
Good. That's the question that he's posing to you, though. He obviously has a message.
Ah. Part of the nation. It's joining the Jewish nation.
Good. Bar Mitzvah is officially joining the Jewish people. And he created a drama in which he has this endearing father who wants only the best for his son. Anything you ever wanted, I'll give you. And he's not really addressing the issue of a Bar Mitzvah, though. But he's promising the boy, no problem, I'll foot the bill. Anything to make you happy. And the child suddenly standing there at the Kotel, something clicks. Something rings in his mind's ear. He suddenly notices that the Kotel is something more than a bunch of old stones. And as he touches it, he realizes that he's a lot more than just a selfish little boy. And at that moment, as he's touching the Kotel, he grows up. And he says to his dad, maybe you should also. You know, we have bar mitzvahs for adults also. Yeah, come forward. And the author got these concepts across in such a delightful way, which would otherwise be, you know, a critique on some bar mitzvah that he undoubtedly attended and was disappointed. He instead brought it across in such a delightful way that it just brings a smile to your mouth and, hey, he has a good point. Let me think about it. Let's turn over, and this is something that is my personal delight, knowing that the author is yeshiva bred, and he wrote it with concepts in mind. You wonder what went through the author's mind as he penned the lyrics for that song. And I thought for a drop, and I came up with these two sections. Number one, that we would want to understand what the Kotel represents for the Jewish people, according to source material. And number two, we would want to understand what a bar mitzvah is, according to Jewish tradition. And then, at the end of our session, to go back and listen to the song again and appreciate that song that much more. We start up with understanding the Kotel. What is the Kotel? The one remaining wall of the temple. Archaeologists go around and they could find remnants and they could basically see what the borders of the temple were, but the one wall that remains standing and which was prophesied to remain standing and is described in Jewish literature, that it will always remain standing until the building of the third temple. That wall ain't coming down. And that's a promise because it symbolizes that even though the temple was destroyed, it's not over.
Is it going to be part of the third temple?
Presumably. That I can't say, but I know that it's going to be there until the time that the third temple will be rebuilt. The symbolism here is that when God destroyed the second temple, he didn't destroy it. He's busy doing renovations. You know the grandfather clause? Anybody who's in real estate? If you knock down the house, so then you got to start with variances fresh. All new zoning laws.
You leave a wall.
But if you leave a wall, if you leave the boiler room, if you leave the basement, then the house is not destroyed. And the house is standing. We're doing renovations. The zoning inspector walks by. You call this renovations? And you pull out the law book. The law book says if a wall is standing, it's still called renovations. And that wall remains standing to say that that palace, which we join with God on the closest level, in the holiest place on earth, that palace is undergoing renovations. Holiest place on earth, we use an expression, that's the place where heaven kisses earth. That's the point of union. When we talk about prayer, what direction do we pray to?
East
towards Jerusalem, right? If you're in Israel, you don't necessarily pray east. Depends what direction you are from the temple. The site of the temple is central. And you're always facing that location because there's a concept that your prayers are directed to that point of the earth, and from there they ascend to heaven. Now, if physically you can't face that direction, believe me, your words, you know, they are better than the best guided missile, and they will find their way. But your intent is towards that location, because that's the location of union between heaven and earth. We'll see in a moment. When God created man, where did he take the earth from to create first man? from the place of the temple and joined it with earth from the rest of the world. From the four directions of the world he pulled, but from the place of the temple. That location is the place where God, in his spirituality, in his loftiness, is going to be able to create a physical human being that's going to have a spiritual component. That's the location. When Isaac is brought up as if he's going to be a sacrifice, God played a real good game, didn't he? What's the story of Isaac? Don't fail me now, guys.
He was tied up as a sacrifice.
Good. Abraham, Avram, and Yitzchak were under the impression that Avram was truly being asked to bring Yitzchak up on the altar to be sacrificed. God only wanted him to bring it up. But the expression up was understood to mean sacrifice him. So Avram goes through the motions, Yitzchak goes through the motions, and then at the last moment, God said, you did your job well. I only wanted to see if you're willing to do it. You brought him up. You went through the exercise. Now it's over. Bring the ram in his place. Great. What happened to Isaac at that moment? He became a spiritual being. He's still alive because God stopped him at the last moment, but he became a spiritual being. The Malbim in this past week's parasha writes, the concept of a sacrifice is that a human being is able to take the animal, kill the animal, and as they're killing the animal, to meditate on that experience as if you are destroying, so to speak, your physical and letting your spiritual soar. If you follow that logic, which is very profound, but just for the exercise of it, to Yitzchak, Yitzchak's under the impression, normally you can't sacrifice yourself, there's no such thing. Yitzchak is lying there thinking, he's not meditating on the ram, that the ram's going to get killed, and it's as if I'm getting killed, and I'm sacrificing my physical. He thinks he's about to get killed. And that's God's will. Fine. He tells his father, tie me up. I shouldn't move and mess it up. And he is, because of this trick that God played on them, to play this game out, even though God didn't intend it to happen, he has elevated himself as a physical human being to the highest exalted status that a human being can be. He became a spiritual being. He's willing to let his body go. Willing. That's not God's will. So he's going to be a happy living human being. But he's willing. Where does that happen?
Temple Mount.
Temple Mount. The place that heaven kisses earth. That's this location. This is the most opportune place to connect with Hashem. The Kotel is the one remaining wall, like a flag, saying that that relationship will one day be restored. Now, most Jews, if you ask them, what's the Kotel, they'd grope with words for a correct answer. But in our hearts, there's no question, there's a responsive chord, knowing that that represents the eternity of our nation. Quote number one. This is a mitzvah in the Torah. They shall make a sanctuary, a mikdash for me, and I shall dwell among them. Originally, the sanctuary was in the desert, movable, but eventually, when we stabilized in the land of Israel, so the mikdash also stabilized in the land of Israel, and it was in the city of Jerusalem, designated spot, what we call Temple Mount. I quoted number two and number three for you briefly. God created man by taking earth from the place of the mikdash and joined it with earth from the four directions of the world. This is the location to create man joined with the rest of the world. Avram bowed and prayed in that place, and he said, after the experience with Yitzchak at the Akedah. In this place should be the service for generations. And the verse states, so it will be said, in this place Avram bowed to God. Every time we come to this location, we remember that first Jew also had his grandest moment in this place. Okay. Number four is a quote from Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, when he inaugurated the first Beis HaMikdash. He very much understood its role in Jewish life. Prayers would be directed to this location. This would be the palace, the love palace between God and the Jewish people. People would make their pilgrimage here three times a year, and they would see on festivals what it meant to be together with Hashem. And he said, when they will do wrong against you, for there is no one who doesn't do wrong. King Solomon didn't have an illusion of perfect people. You will place them in the hands of the enemy. He understood that there's going to be destruction of the temple at some point. And from that exile, they will pray to you in the direction of their land that you granted their ancestors, and specifically towards this location. For us, the focus was the Kotel. And that's quote number five. The divine presence does not leave the western wall, as the verse states, behold, he remains behind our wall. Now, I didn't give you the rest of the quote. I realized afterwards it's very meaningful. Meitzitz min hacharakim, peeking through the cracks. And if you picture the wall in front of you, that end of the verse really is very meaningful. Peeking through the cracks. And we view God still there, and at the western wall, he did not remove his presence. And so the role of the Kotel that we have. Number six, looking towards the future, they will settle on the land where your forefathers dwelled. This is a prophecy for the future. They will settle on it, they, their children, their grandchildren, forever. This is the incoming, ingathering of the exiles. My servant David will be prince over them forever. It doesn't mean David. We know that in prophecies, it means an imagery of someone who reminds you of David. It means a noble, worthy descendant, worthy of carrying David's name in the world. But it's a great, 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 great grandchild. My servant David will be prince over them. I shall forge a covenant with them of everlasting peace. I shall grant them this, multiply them, and I will place my mikdash among them forever. In other words, the Kotel is not the end all. It's the promise of a new beginning. And that's a good question, whether the Kotel will simply be incorporated or how it will work. But either way, the old building, again, this phrase, is undergoing renovations until we finally rebuild it.
What days are the biggest days at the Kotel?
There's a very famous experience during Sukkot of the Birchas Kohanim day, where many, many Kohanim line up and they choose which day of Chol HaMoed Sukkot so that they all there the same day, and it's an awesome experience. There are different days. I mean, Tisha B'Av obviously is a major day, day of mourning. There are different days that become a big focus. And that's the theme of the Kotel. Let's move along and try to clinch it, understanding a bar mitzvah. Okay? Before we start the quotes from traditional literature, if you asked a Jew on the street, what is a bar mitzvah? What would the answer be?
13th birthday party.
Good. a 13th birthday party.
Slightly more sophisticated.
On a bas mitzvah would be a 12th birthday party.
Or a bar mitzvah, a rite of passage for a young Jewish male when he reaches 13.
Entering a new
stage of adulthood, so to speak.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's the learned response. Good. Any other suggestions? What is a bar mitzvah?
You read from the Torah. Call to the Torah.
Momentous occasion. Since he reached adulthood, so it's an exciting moment when he can read from the Torah for the first time, if he's allowed to. He wants to. So, if he's able to, he does. If not, if he can't read from the Torah, not everybody can memorize properly and everything else, then he just gets called to the Torah and recites the blessings. Translate that for a moment, right? Girls in traditional observance would not get called to the Torah. But if you want to go to the essence of a bar mitzvah, your definition has to accommodate bas mitzvah as well. And I think David's is very perceptive. It's a rite of passage. It's entering into a new stage. And the bas mitzvah girl is doing the same thing. May not be with the same public ceremony, because our belief about girls is that their strength is more private. But it's the same message. It's entering into privileges and responsibilities of adulthood in the Jewish world. Yeah. You have a comment?
Well, it's a moment where a person become obligated in doing a lot of things, which until then was not obligated.
It was practice. Very good. Herman Wouk, in his book, This Is My God, complains, even in the 50s and 60s, of what this author finally put to lyrics in recent times. He writes that people view the bar mitzvah as an end to Hebrew school. And he says it's supposed to be the beginning. All of that was training. Now it's time to do the real thing.
Right.
Take a look at quote 7. Straight from Shulchan Aruch, Jewish law. When does a person start teaching his son? And this would apply for daughters as well in many respects. When the child begins to speak. You start with the verse, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Torah was taught to us through Moshe. Also the first verse of Shema. And then you teach them slowly until the age of 6 or 7, when the child is brought to a teacher for formal education. We incorporate that even today. There's a beautiful tune, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. You sing with the kids. You say Shema before the kid goes to sleep. I have my own little ritual with the kids that's very cute. I learn for 2 minutes with a child, and then I pick them up as if the child is my Sefer Torah. And I dance around the room singing Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Torah, 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 Torah. Kids love it, right? They get a jelly bean afterwards. But my wife once saw it, and she says, now I understand why they want to come to the study to learn with you. It's not just the jelly bean. That attention of feeling that you are the future of the Jewish people. You're the living Torah. And as long as I still have strength to pick them up, I try to pick them up. You dance with them, figuratively, literally, whatever it is, but you bring that message clearly that this child is the next link in Torah was commanded to us through Moshe. Shema Yisrael, Hashem is one. And that's the beginning of Jewish education. Number 8, when a person's child becomes bar mitzvah, we recite the blessing, Shepetorani me'on shoshelo zeh, that we're absolved of punishment. Until now, the father was on his own, trying his best to guide the child. And that's always very hard, to get someone else to do something they have to do. You ever try it in a business setting, in a parenting setting, to get someone else to do something that they have to do, that you want them to do, is not easy to get them to do it. Once the person is bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, the child themselves develops the wherewithal to observe, and it becomes a partnership now.
And the parent is off the hook. Huh?
I can still mentor you, but I'm mentoring you on your mitzvahs. I'm not getting you to do what I want you to do. You yourself have reached that point of adulthood. Why the celebration, though? So there's actually a fascinating source. Whenever you complete a mitzvah, or whenever you have the wherewithal to start a mitzvah venture, it's appropriate to make a celebration. Reb Moshe Feinstein was asked, I give it to you in quote 10, if a person who finally finished a certain section that was very difficult for them, one page of Talmud, if they should make a celebration. And he says, yes. Every person, according to their level, should make a celebration when they reach the point of completion. Likewise, when you start something, number 9, Shlomo awoke, and behold, it was a valid dream. The dream we're talking about is that famous dream. I mean, I could really give this to you for homework and just tell you to look it up, right? But then you might not sleep tonight. The dream we're talking about was that Shlomo was offered whatever he wants. Basically, wisdom or wealth. And he chose wisdom. And he became the wisest person that ever lived. So Shlomo awoke and realized it was a valid dream. Because he awoke and he was able to understand what the birds were chirping about. He had that level of gift, of perception, to know what was going on. So he came to Yerushalayim, he stood before the Aron, he brought sacrifices, and he made a feast for all of his servants. From here we learn that one should make a festive meal for the completion of a Torah endeavor. And that's the bar mitzvah. We're ready to start real observance. We're empowered. We're completing the training stage and we're starting the real endeavor. And as such, a celebration is correct. What type of celebration? I'd like to listen to the song once more and let that question go through your mind as you listen.
Family was gathered by the hotel, dressed in latest fashions and designs. They flew it all the way from Chicago. Only the best one came by. Hey, Dad, I don't know why we came here. We could have come on this one back at home. Well, son, you see, this here place is special. Don't you appreciate oak stones? Now put this back to show them on your shoulders. And make sure that you smile when I go. And put this prayer book in your left hand. Put your right hand up upon the wall. Can you witness the design of the hotel? And put his hand upon the wall. What's all we need to the hotel? The calling. Can you hear my call? Why I'm standing
Observations.
It's like a magic to me. Suddenly I heard this song in a completely different dimension.
The to song? Me,
yeah.
The second time.
The second
right.
time? Right. Yeah.
What did you hear the second time?
Everything just came so clear, and, you know, pretty much every line in this song, you know, became, you know, spoke to me. When the first time around was just. Not quite sure, I guess, what it's about. Kind of small.
It's a very thought-out song. When I heard it the first time, I said, there's a lot of depth there. I got to listen to it again. Anyone else?
There were a lot of good concepts, it seemed like, the first time around. But in hearing it a second time, just like Yuri said, like, it kind of all came together. I couldn't visualize. I understood the concepts the first time, but the second time I actually visualized it in my head. You know, verse by verse, line by line, I can see it. And I guess that's what it was intended. You
it's
know,
beautiful.
Verbally intended. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like placing yourself in Kenny's shoes and being right there at the moment, you know, relieving this experience.
Well, it seems like the family is there for very superficial reasons. They're there in their fashions and designs. That's the first line. They don't even know why they're there.
Typical American Jewish.
Yeah. It's just like tradition. We have to do this.
Smile for the camera. It's a very, you know, it's a gross generalization. It's very critical and judgmental. And, you know, maybe you shouldn't say things like that. But, you know, maybe true and maybe it's not true. But...
Right, we're being very cautious. We're not pointing fingers. It's intended to be a delightful way to bring across a message, but we know that message to be true, even if we're not going to point to any one individual bar mitzvah and object. Mm-hmm. But there's a concept here.
Right.
It's a tremendous concept, and I found very dramatic that when the kid gets it, He turns to his father and says, you know, I wish you'd get it too.
But at the same time, even though their parents may be not educated, and but they're Jews, and they know...
Very much so.
Yeah.
Right, they brought him here. He
spent good money, he brought him here, and he wants only the best for his son.
Maybe even though don't, real, you know, not realizing this, like, it's inside, it's like instinct more, maybe, for Jews.
We know the cult, listen to the father, like... He doesn't know how to express it. He knows there's something important about the Kotel, and the best things he can articulate is can't something special about old stone. He doesn't know what to say, but he obviously means something.
You know, sometimes you know the deeper meaning, but like you said, we are people who get caught up in the different physical things, and you know, you're not always aware of the actual meaning when you're going through it. So
maybe you should have done research first or asked questions.
You could have Googled bar mitzvah and see what you come up with. Probably what comes up top is party planners.
But I think that the best thing he could do, he did. He brought a child to Jerusalem and to Kotel. Yeah, I don't know he could give him any more, you know. And, I mean, I believe it's great. So maybe he, like Rosa said, he didn't realize it, but...
I mean, it's like handing the child the keys to a place that you've never been inside, and you know...
Gorgeous, yeah. Gorgeous. It's the parent who gives the child a chumash as a present, even though he himself never studied it, but he knows whatever's written in here is true.
Right.
Take it, study it, I wish only the best. So you took him to the Kotel, I don't really understand, I can't really articulate, I don't know how to explain, but I know this is special, and I somehow will it into existence that you also should appreciate it. And that's a gift.
The amazing thing is that it happened.
Right. And that's how he plays it out, that the gift was appreciated.
You have been listening to a lecture by Rabbi Mordechai Rhein. For more information, or to bring Rabbi Rhein as a guest lecturer to your community, please call 908-770-9072 or email rmrhein@teach613.org. You can also visit us on the web at teach613.org.